Oh, I'd let you know if you did. All right, well, we're going to continue on this morning our series entitled Unclean, where we are looking at how Jesus dealt with people who society looked at as being unclean. And there were a number of different ways that they differentiated this class of people. One, among the Jewish folks, is they had a, and we looked at this some in past weeks about how people could be deemed unclean according to the law. And so for those folks, we would call them ceremonially unclean. And last week, we looked at the leper, and boy, he fit right into that. But also, at the same time, the leper we would also call socially unclean because, let's be honest, who wants to shack up with a leper? Who wants to go near a leper? Who wants to? We looked at that last week and just talked about how terrible of a disease that was and what it did to a person and how that had an effect on every aspect of their life going forward. And we looked at how Jesus dealt with a person like that. And if you were here and you remember that account, we saw that as others would have certainly been turning away from that leper, as others would have been looking at him or treating him with contempt, Jesus is moved when he sees the condition of this leper and is moved with compassion to the point that he doesn't just speak a word as the leper's coming to him. He waits till the leper comes and he touches him. And he says, you know what, I am willing that you be clean. And he's healed of his leprosy. And so we took from that to that Jesus deals in compassion with people. People who we would look at and say, we're just going to love them from a distance. You know, that spirit of compassion, I think, is something that we have probably become really good at squelching. And again, a lot of this, the burden on my heart for sharing this series and developing this series is the fact that we are constantly bombarded day in and day out with this idea, media, social media, you know, higher ups, leadership, whatever, that if we're different from someone and we think differently and we act differently, then we don't have any business being around each other. We don't have any business being together. You know, how many of us have seen a picture in a magazine or on social media of a kid in a war-torn country that's covered in dust from a building that's been blown up? And your first thought is, that's terrible, and you're moved with compassion. But then what takes over? Well, look at the color of his skin. Bless his heart. He's just over there, and his parents have probably done this, or his country's done that. And that spirit of compassion, we've become professionals at just putting it beside us. Or you think about a little kid with a swollen stomach in an African country. And we see that and we think, oh man, that's heartbreaking. And that spirit of compassion overwhelms us. And then we think, well, that's unfortunate that they are where they are. And, you know, it goes away that quickly. Jesus had compassion for people. And we have talked, we have laid down that foundation that as believers, our identity is in Him. We talked last week about the exchanged life, okay? If we're in Him, He is in us. We have exchanged our life for Him. While He no longer physically walks on this earth, His ministry has not changed. His work has not changed. He continues that through His new body, which is the church. If His ministry and mission is showing compassion, then we ought to show compassion. And don't ever apologize for it, folks. This week, we're going to look at something a little different. We're going to look at the most extreme example of uncleanness in this entire series. And I say it's the most extreme because we're going beyond the physical, and we are going to touch the spiritual. And that might sound a little confusing here at first. You'll get what I mean here in a minute. But let me say as a word of warning or a disclaimer that this is something that you probably haven't spent a tremendous amount of time studying, researching, and that's good. What we're going to look at this morning, it's good to not have an obsession with it. Because what we're looking at is unclean spirits, demons, all right? And one commentator I read this week said the best way for us to go about looking at this type of stuff is to treat it kind of like we would germs, all right? It's helpful to know when you are around germs, but you don't go seeking out germs so that you can fight them with Clorox wipes or whatever. You kind of just say, okay, well, they're around. We're going to be cautious. We're going to understand that we are in the presence of germs, that there are germs around us that we don't see. And, you know, we're just, unless we are specifically called to deal with that germ, you know, we will. But otherwise, we're just going to go about our life as we normally would. It's easy to get caught up in the mystery surrounding unclean spirits and demon possession. Especially, again, this is one of those things that Hollywood has taken and they love to put their spin on it. And for most of us, that's probably where our understanding of possession and unclean spirits came from. You watch The Exorcist, you think you're an expert on such things. Well, we're gonna look a little bit this morning and see how Jesus deals with the spiritual side, because this demon possesses a person. So again, there is a physical need that has to be dealt with, but there's also this spiritual need that has to be dealt with in the form of an unclean spirit. So we need to be aware of these things. We need to be able to recognize them, but we don't want it to become consuming, and we don't want this to become a platform from which we go about seeking to engage in spiritual battles that are not ours to engage in. So, saying all of that, let me begin this morning by looking at Acts chapter 19. And I want to begin with giving you an example just to help you see a couple of things before we go to Mark chapter 5. So Acts chapter 19, verses 24 through 28 is what I want to look at. And if you look at the subtitle, you see that Paul is ministering around Ephesus here. And he has been going around, and he's been dealing with a form of idolatry and pagan worship, specifically this goddess named Artemis, or if you have the King James, Diana. Okay? And as Paul is going about and he's preaching the gospel, and people are turning from their pagan worship and from the worship of Diana or Artemis, those who fabricate idols, those who fabricate these shrines, begin to see a problem with what Paul is doing. Because if people are no longer worshiping the God that they're creating with their own hands, then their bottom line is going to go away, isn't it? I think it's easy for us, as we looked at in the book of Judges, and we talk about idolatry and we talk about gods created by human hands, to have that impression that, you know, since you're worshiping something that you created, that there's no harm that can come from that. I want you to see this morning, folks, that when we engage in things like this, when people engage in things like this, they're opening themselves up. The occult, you know, magic things, mystical, spiritual, otherworldly things, they're opening themselves up to become a vessel for unclean spirits. And that was a big problem in this day and age. You see there, and back we looked at Mark chapter 1, before we even looked at the leper, you see Jesus left and right casting out unclean spirits. Okay? So Paul's dealing with this in Ephesus. People are turning. Verse 24, a man named Demetrius, a silversmith who made silver shrines of Artemis, was bringing no little business to the craftsmen. These he gathered together with the workmen of similar trades and said, men, you know that our prosperity depends upon this business. You see and hear that not only in Ephesus, but in almost all of Asia, this Paul has persuaded and turned away a considerable number of people, saying that gods made with hands are no gods at all. Not only is there danger that this trade of ours fall into disrepute, but also that the temple of the great goddess Artemis be regarded as worthless, and that she whom all of Asia and the world worship will even be dethroned from her magnificence. So you see the nature of this appeal that he's making. He's worried about the bottom line, but he also apparently is a worshiper and thinks highly of this goddess. And he gets these people fired up. Verse 28, when they heard this, they were filled with rage and began crying out, saying, great is Artemis of the Ephesians. Again, if you have the King James, that word or that name Artemis is, it's translated Diana. So these people are motivated by greed. They get the townsfolk riled up because someone is trying to speak out against their local form of worship. Now, we might be tempted to read that and say, okay, well, it's harmless, you know, worshiping gods created with human hands. I want to show you now a modern day example of what happens when people open themselves up to this kind of thing. This is not limited to Jesus' time, okay? And I'm going to begin a long quote here, okay? Jim was skipping school often, obviously a loner, depressed, with some confusion about his sexual identity. He wore black exclusively, black shirts, black pants, black shoes, and a long black trench coat. Jim also dyed his hair black. His grandmother was his guardian and brought him to my office for counseling. He admitted to me that he had been worshiping the goddess Diana and had offered sacrifice to her in the form of animal blood and was thinking of offering his own blood to her. He claimed that she often appeared to him or spoke to him. He was also involved with tarot cards, books of magic, etc. I presented the gospel to him and he declined. We met once a week for some time, and he gradually opened up and said that he was afraid to turn to Christ because of what Diana would do to him. I finally convinced him that Jesus was all-powerful and would protect him if he renounced Diana. He agreed to meet with me and my leadership to pray and to confront Diana. Jim wore numerous rings with the faces of demonic types of creatures on them. I think one or two may have had a goat head on them. Leadership team, six men, and his youth pastor prayed for about a half an hour and then spoke and asked any demons to identify themselves. When confronted, Diana was identified as well as one other demon who identified itself as destruction. Jim's facial features were altered, his voice changed and sounded, the best adjective I can think of is evil, and for the next hour we spoke to the demon, which refused to come out. At one point, the demon calls Jim to get up and walk away, at which point I told it to stop and come out. Jim turned and came at me threateningly, but froze when I spoke with authority for it to stop. It also made threatening gestures and comments to my youth pastor, saying in an eerie voice, I know who you are and I'll take care of you. At one point, it began wailing with a mournful and a loud voice. One of my leadership team began singing Psalm 3:3, and the rest of us joined in. As we sang, the demonic voice began to slowly subside. This spurred us on to sing louder, and the voice withered until just a whimper and then completely stopped. At the end of about 1 hour, as I commanded the demon to leave, Jim sort of slumped, almost as if he were passing out. Then he opened his eyes as if he were waking up from a bad dream. We all concluded that the demon had departed, and so we asked if there were any others present. A second demon was identified and dealt with in a similar fashion. After the second one departed, we tried to test and see if any others were present. There was no response, so we encouraged Jim to pray and receive Christ. He did pray, and all the men prayed that he would be protected. We then warned him to burn his clothing, his rings, and all of his demonic paraphernalia. He seemed reluctant to give it all up, especially the rings. We asked him to burn everything, but he would not part with the rings, even though we assured him that one of our men who had a welding shop could make a fire hot enough to destroy them. Jim seemed better for a week or so. He wore different, normal clothing and seemed generally happy. But one day he suddenly got much worse. And he writes, see Luke 11, 24, 26, which you can make a note of that, but it talks about unclean spirits going to a waterless place and then deciding to return from where they came from. And then returning, they find the house well kept and find themselves unwelcome. And so they go and they get more demons and they, you know, they come back stronger. So he says, regarding him getting worse, he attacked his grandmother, held her to the kitchen floor with a butcher knife. She was able to escape and called the police, but refused to press charges. Within a few days, he was sent to Southern California to live with his mother. And he says, I saw him briefly about 2 years later at his grandmother's funeral, and he seemed to be better. I didn't have a chance to speak with him in private, but his appearance was promising, and he told me that he was doing okay and not involved in the things that he once had been. Now that came, do I have your attention now? That came from an interview that I did when I was in college. I was for my class on the book of Acts. And the man that I interviewed was my dad's college roommate from Moody Bible Institute, who has been serving as a pastor for many, many years in Oregon. Why do I share that with you? A couple reasons. One reason I share it with you is to help you see that the powers of darkness are still as real today as they were when Jesus walked the earth casting them out. Another reason is to help you see the truth behind Ephesians 6:12. Ephesians 6:12 says, our struggle is not against flesh and blood, but against the rulers, against the powers, against the world forces of this darkness, against the spiritual forces of wickedness in the heavenly places. You know, that just doesn't go for extreme cases like this with possession. You know, when we look at people who are lost and who think differently than us and act differently than us, again, this is an extreme case, but instead of holding them at an arm's length and saying, well, I'm just going to love them from a distance. Folks, we have to understand that these people are lost. And they don't know that they're lost. And they are not our enemy. Who's our enemy? Our enemy is the one who is deceiving them. Our struggle's not with them. It's with him, the prince of this world. So saying all that, let's look at Mark chapter 5. Mark chapter 5. How does Jesus go about dealing with unclean spirits? Mark 5, starting in verse 1. It says, they came to the other side of the sea, into the country of the Gerasenes. And when he got out of the boat, immediately a man from the tombs with an unclean spirit met him. If you were to backtrack a little bit in the text, you'll see that Jesus and his disciples are leaving huge crowds of people in the religious Jewish area. And it just comes about, Jesus says, let's go to the other side. And I'm sure the disciples probably thought, yeah, let's go over there where there's not crowds, we'll get some rest. and we'll come back. We'll continue this awesome ministry that we have. And on their way over, a huge storm comes up. And the disciples are freaking out. And Jesus is asleep. And they go and they say, "Jesus, don't you care if we die out here on the sea in this storm?" And what does Jesus do? He gets up, he rebukes the wind and the waves. And the disciples are left dumbfounded. They say, "Who is this that even the wind and the waves obey him?" So they've already had a rocky night. It's possible that it's still dark when they arrive on the other side of the shore. At best, it's probably dawn. You know how you get when you're tired. And as soon as their boat hits the shore, they hear this otherworldly scream. And this naked man starts running down from the tombs towards their boat. I would have been looking for a stick to push, get back in the water, get away from this guy. Listen to his condition. His dwelling had been among the tombs. No one was able to bind him anymore, even with a chain, because he had often been bound with shackles and chains, and the chains had been torn apart by him, and the shackles had been broken in pieces, and no one was strong enough to subdue him. This is another one of those things, kind of like with the leper. We can't imagine it because we haven't experienced it. At least most of us probably have not. I mean, some of you go to third world countries and mission work, and you find stuff like this. But in our comfort zone, we probably have not experienced this. And you see the superhuman strength that accompanies this man with an unclean spirit. They can't shackle him, they cannot chain him, they cannot contain him. He does what he wants. Now, if you go and you look at the scriptures, I've done the donkey work for you. A demon is a fallen angel. And there are over 100 different references in the New Testament to demons or unclean spirits. If you throw Satan into that same grouping, you'll see that every single writer in the New Testament addresses in some way, shape, or form this idea of demons or unclean spirits. And 9 different times in the New Testament, we get fairly detailed accounts of Jesus dealing with these unclean spirits. And Mark and Luke and Matthew all address this same account. Matthew is a little different. Matthew mentions 2 people. It appears that Mark and Luke simply go with the more extreme of the two. Matthew also mentions a different place. And people have looked at that and said, "Well, look here, you got a contradiction." Except the contradiction is like Mark and Luke saying they came to the region of Sparta, and Matthew says they came to Allegheny County. You know, one is a bigger picture. One's talking about the village, one's talking about, if you could use the word county to describe it, you know, that's what it is. And so this man was violent. He was possessing of a strength that was out of this world. And he would have undoubtedly been a terrifying sight to behold. People went the long way rather than passing by him. Verse 5 says, "Constantly, night and day, he was screaming among the tombs and in the mountains and gashing himself with stones." Seeing Jesus from a distance, verse 6, he ran up and bowed down before him. Now, isn't that something to behold? He comes running to him, and certainly the disciples have to think, this is all she wrote for us. And then when this man with this unclean spirit gets there, he hits his knees and bows before the Son of God. And he says, in a loud voice. Apparently, unclean spirits don't have inside voices. I won't say anything about my kids. What he says, he says, "What business do we have with each other, Jesus, Son of the Most High God?" Look at how he identifies. He knows exactly who Jesus is. Bows before him, addresses him as Jesus, Son of the Most High God. And then he asks him, he implores, he said, "I implore you, by God, do not torment me." For he had been saying to him, "Come out of the man, you unclean spirit." And he was asking him, "What is your name?" And he said to him, "My name is Legion, for we are many." And you know, we're reminded here again concerning the difference between knowing God and knowing about God. Even these demons know that there's a time coming when they're going to be bound and they're going to be cast into the lake of fire. But that time is not yet, and so they seem to be a little confused by what's going on when Jesus shows up here. But you can see how they submit to him, begging him, "Don't torment us, don't bind us, don't send us to the pit before the appointed time." I remind you again, we're dealing with two parties here. Physically, this man is so tormented in his own body that he tries to take his own life by cutting himself with stones. But spiritually, there's this gang of demons that have set up shop and won't be controlled, and they won't be contained until Jesus shows up. And so for the unclean spirit and with it darkness in general, Jesus demonstrates authority over all of it. He demonstrates authority over all of it. David was telling me this morning, and Warren Wiersbe's commentary, he talks about a couple different, you know, Jesus calming the wind and the waves, and Jesus casting out this unclean spirit, and the next one is the woman who touches the hem of his garment, and just talking about how Jesus has victory over nature and victory over the spiritual realm and victory over, you know, physically our ailments and disease. And the word that I had was authority, you know, victory, authority. They're synonyms of each other, I'm sure. But Jesus demonstrates authority, and there's no bucking it from these unclean spirits. They ask his permission. There's a herd of 2,000 pigs over here on the hillside, and they say, "Jesus, can we go into those pigs? If you're going to make us come out of this guy." And Jesus says, "Yeah, you can go into the pigs." So they leave this man, they go into the pigs. The pigs run into the sea and they drown. That might sound a little weird for some of you because you're thinking, why does Jesus permit them to go to the pigs? Why doesn't he use his authority to bind them and send them to the pit before the appointed time? And if you have that question, that's a great question. But the answer to it is because they serve a purpose in his sovereign plan. And that might immediately take you to a place of, I don't understand how or why that would be used. But let me share with you a little side note that might help give you some understanding or some clarity in this. Three people were not possessed by demons, not possessed by an unclean spirit, but were afflicted by Satan or by an unclean spirit. One was Job. All right. Do we take any encouragement from Job's account, from the faithfulness that we see from God during Job's trials? Paul, his thorn in the flesh, we're told is a messenger from Satan. And three times Paul said, "God, please take it away." And God says, "No. My power is made perfect in weakness." And have you ever been encouraged by that? Peter. Jesus told Peter, "Satan has asked permission to sift you like wheat." He says, but I, praying for you, Peter. You encouraged by that? To know that we have one that intercedes on our behalf? And so if there was no battle going on in the spiritual realm, there's three wonderful encouragements that would be gone. If this account was gone from Mark and Luke and Matthew, would we still have the same understanding of the authority that Jesus has over unclean spirits? These things are intentional, folks, and it's a part of His sovereign plan. And it's okay for us to sometimes say, boy, I just don't really understand why that's the case, but He's sovereign and we're not, okay? He has the authority. And when He says jump, they say how high. It all serves a purpose for His glory. So the pigs become the new vessel for these demons. There's 2,000 pigs. You know, that word legion, we typically associate with a group of about 6,000. Maybe multiple spirits went into multiple pigs. I don't know. But thousands of demons, thousands of unclean spirits come out of this man. They go into the pigs. They run into the sea. They die. And people freak out. The villagers that are seeing all of this taking place, they freak out. And I would have to. You know, this region where they are, you're going to see it described in another place as the Decapolis, the 10 cities. And if you go back, you remember when we looked in the book of Joshua, and it talks about the pagan nations that Joshua and the people drive out of the promised land. Well, they go to the other side of the sea, and they establish their new cities, and that's what ultimately later we come to recognize as the Decapolis. And so this is a dark, dirty area. Pagan worship, obviously, still rampant in this area. And, you know, they were all about their pigs. And all of a sudden, they're hurt. 2,000 pigs. It's a huge herd of pigs. And they run into the sea, and they're killed. And so the people that witness all of this taking place, they run, and they begin to tell others. And those folks come to see for themselves. And they see that formerly demon-possessed man sitting there. He's got clothes on now. He's in his right mind. And surely they are going to come to Jesus and they're going to say, Jesus, we've got more problems like this. Come and deal with our problems, right? No, they come and they see him clothed and in his right mind. The pigs are gone and they ask Jesus to leave. They implored him to leave their region. He doesn't try to convince them to let him stay. He gets his disciples. Well, his disciples were probably already in the boat, ready to go. He puts himself in the boat. And as they're about to leave, that man who had formerly been just totally eaten up with unclean spirits comes. And verse 18 says, as he was getting in the boat, the man who had been demon-possessed was imploring him that he might accompany him. Isn't that a beautiful picture? This man who had once been completely without hope, who now, he's free. You think about Pilgrim and Pilgrim's Progress, who's carrying around that burden. And finally, the burden is gone. And what a day that is. This man's burden is gone. And he wants to go with Jesus. He wants to follow the one who has freed him. You know, none of this is a surprise to Jesus. Leaving the crowds to come over here and get accosted by a naked, demon-possessed man. That didn't surprise Jesus. It surprised the heck out of the disciples, but it didn't surprise Jesus. No, Jesus came for this man. That was his reason. That was his goal in going to the area of the Decapolis, was this one person. And now that person wants to come with him. He wants to be a literal follower of Jesus. And verse 19 says, he did not let him. Jesus says, no, you can't come with me. Why? Because he has a task for him. He says, go home to your people and report to them what great things the Lord has done for you and how he had mercy on you. Oh, there's our key word. We saw with the leper, Jesus has compassion. Now we see with this demon-possessed man that Jesus has mercy. You'll see in your bulletin there for your grace guide, the second paragraph down there right in the middle, the simplest explanation of mercy is deliverance from judgment. I'm inclined to read this account and think to myself, this guy is getting what he deserved. He's reaping what he sowed. If he's dabbling in the occult, sorcery, magic, pagan worship, idolatry, if he's dabbling in those things and opens himself up to a legion of demons, well, better luck next time. You know, that's what I'm inclined to think. And so did he deserve what he was dealing with? Yeah, I would be inclined to say yes. Does that keep Jesus from delivering him? No. Does that cause Jesus to withhold mercy? No, it doesn't. Folks, when we look and we see injustice around us, when we look and we see people who are suffering as a result of stupid decisions that they made, is it our right to stand back? And just say, well, it's unfortunate, you're reaping what you sowed. No. Jesus had a mission for this man. Go and tell people about how I had mercy on you. We have no idea the testimony that comes about on the other side of these situations. Did this man do his job? We know with the leper last week, he did not. Jesus told the leper, don't tell anybody what I did. What did the leper do? Exactly what Jesus told him not to do. Here Jesus says, you go and you tell people what I've done for you. Let's look and see if he did his job. Mark 7:31. So they've left. They come back. Again, he went out to the region of Tyre, came through Sidon to the Sea of Galilee within the region of Decapolis. Okay, they're back. Chapter 8, verse 1. In those days when there was again a large crowd. You go on and you read, it's the feeding of the 4,000. So the first time he goes, he gets a couple steps off the boat. They ask him to leave. The second time he comes, thousands and thousands of people flock to him. And we see that this is not an isolated incident. It says there was again a large crowd. Did he do his job? Yeah, he did. He did. Jesus has mercy. That man does his job, and look at what happens. Jeremiah 32, 26 through 27 says, then the word of the Lord came to Jeremiah, saying, behold, I am the Lord, the God of all flesh. Is anything too difficult for me? Folks, even the hardest case, even the dirtiest of the unclean is not too difficult for Jesus. And guess what, folks? He lives in us. We are his body. We are the body that he uses to continue this ministry of bringing people to himself. And how do we do that? I can't stress this enough. We do that by getting up daily and going forward in a helpless dependence upon him. Not charging forward in our own power and our own strength and our own abilities, but by being willing vessels, dedicated daily to depending on him. This morning, folks, who are the helpless? Who are the hopeless? Who are the ones who are in need of mercy? And how will we respond to them? Will we cross the raging sea? Will we confront the enemy? Will we share the mission if he calls us to do that? Folks, I hope you see the victory is his, the power is his, the work is his. We are just the vessels that he uses. May we be willing to do that. Philippians 4:9. I know Glade Valley, you guys have already looked at this verse a little bit. The things you have learned and received and heard and seen in me, practice these things, and the God of peace will be with you. As Jesus did with his physical body 2,000 years ago, he wants to do with his new body, the church, today. Will we be that vessel? Let's bow. Father, we want to thank you this morning for this amazing account that we have concerning your power over the enemy, concerning how you deal in great mercy with those who do not deserve it. Lord, may you, by the power of your Holy Spirit, which lives in us, give us this same burden for people. Lord, help us to look past our differences. Help us to look past all the reasons that our society says that we shouldn't deal with these people, we shouldn't love these people. And help us, Father, to go to them with a spirit of compassion, with a spirit of mercy, knowing that they are people that you died for. Father, if there's anyone here this morning that finds themselves indirectly in the same position as that demon-possessed man, their struggle is not an unclean spirit, Lord, but their struggle is that they are lost and they are without hope, because they're without you. Lord, open their eyes to see that not only did you cross the raging sea, Lord, you went to the cross for them. Your body was broken, your blood was poured out. So that they may live. Lord, open our eyes to that this morning. Draw us to yourself. We pray in Jesus' name. Amen.